Testing, testing. I was going to say, it does make you want to break into song, doesn't it? Do you dance too?
I do.
Well, now's the time.
Test, test. Thank you. Okay, we're going to get started, guys. Is everybody all excited, ready for injury and illness prevention training? Okay, great.
I love enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's great. Well, at least it went from 3 hours to down to 1.5, so that's a good thing. Woohoo! And we might get out earlier than that if we all behave. This is being audio taped for future reference. And so if anybody has any questions, I'm going to have to run over to you and give you the mic so it gets captured on the audio. Okay? So in case some people don't know me, my name is Elena Forrest. I'm with the police department. I wanted to talk a little bit about the goals of our program here and actually the whole town-wide illness and injury prevention program. And what we're doing is several things to address the town's risk exposure. We're trying to reduce employee accidents, reduce sidewalk injuries, also reduce employee injuries and improve wellness, and strengthen the practices that we use with vendors and contractors in the town to reduce our exposure to liability. We have a health and safety committee that I've been on for a little over a year, and I'm going to point out some of the people. Rumi's on it, Steve Reagan, Bruce Smith, Anthony, GOC, Linda Dido. Who else am I missing that's here this morning on the committee? Todd, I think you're alternate, wherever you are, Todd. So we've been working for about a year-ish on some different things, and I'll go over those. We've been starting some facility inspections around the town, and that's going to be an ongoing thing that we're going to do. We're establishing a hotline for employees to call in to report any sort of safety issue, and Kathy's going to talk about that during her presentation. I'm doing some research on our panic alarms, where they're located, how many there are, who needs them, who doesn't, that type of thing, and we're working on that consistently to determine the best place for those and a procedure for those. We're designing a workplace violence policy. We're identifying training opportunities with ABAG and other training sources so that we can get people to different trainings and maybe collaborate with other agencies on ABAG training. We're developing an emergency evacuation plan for the town and also an emergency operations plan as well. And we review accidents that occur in the town to hopefully mitigate further injury and exposure to the town. So there's a lot going on with this type of program, and we did get a grant from ABAG, and that's why we have Kathy. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce Kathy so we can get going on this. Kathy Bigger-Smith, with all of those acronyms after or little letters and stuff after her name. She's very important if you have little letters like that. It means she's Associate of Risk Management, a Certified Safety Professional, and a Certified Playground Safety Inspector. Mm. Kathy's been active in occupational safety and health since 1979. Her education in biology and chemistry provided not only technical and scientific understanding, but analytical and problem-solving perspectives, which have been effective in evaluating and designing loss prevention programs and determining root cause injuries. Kathy has evaluated and consulted on the safety and absence management programs of major airlines, including Delta and U.S. Airways, Hyatt Hotels, construction and mining companies. And since 2003, Kathy has been involved in evaluating and designing programs to address safety and liability issues facing municipalities. And Kathy was retained to be our Los Gatos Safety Officer in 2007. So, Kathy, take it away.
I always sound better when somebody else talks about me. Thank you very much, Elena. I'm not sure you left a whole lot left for me to say, but that was it in a nutshell. And I want to take this opportunity, before we get started, to thank Greg and Rumi and Pamela, because they, with their insight and support starting well over a year ago, have provided the resources and the time and availability to you all to get this program up and running. And, you know, as you may still be sitting here wondering why we ask you here, but I hope that this will be an hour and a half that is worth your time. So thank you to, I know Rumi's here, and I'm not sure about Greg and Pamela, but hopefully they'll hear about it later. So let's do talk about the why did I ask you here. First of all, and Elena kicked this one off, we want to introduce the actual IIPP. How many of you are aware there has actually been an IIPP in the town for quite a while, and probably other towns and cities where you've worked, you're aware of an injury and illness prevention plan being in place. So it may not be new news to a lot of you. What it does is just simply provide structure to the program. Nobody goes out every day completely ignorant of safety processes and how to prevent accidents and risk management issues. But what the IIPP does for us is give us a structure to that program and helps us coordinate among departments and among people so that it's a comprehensive effort. Maybe more important, at least as far as the state's concerned, Cal OSHA says we have to be here. To quote the standard, Cal OSHA says that 100% of all employees, if an organization has over 10, must be trained in the contents of the IIPP. And from my perspective, and I think from management's perspective, the most important reason that you're here is that you know what safety resources are available to you and where to go to get them. We're all in this together, but nobody can guarantee our individual safety. So we need to know where to go to get the information and be active participants in our program. Questions about that? Why did I ask you here? And I want to give a special thanks to those of you who are here on your days off, because that was a very generous donation of your time, and hopefully this will be worthwhile. All right, just for fun, let's kick this thing off and just see where we are on our baseline knowledge of risk control at Los Gatos. What does IIPP stand for? Is it the Internal Intercommunication Prevention Program? I know that that's a very effective one in most organizations, by the way. People prevent effective communications quite effectively. Is it the Injury and Illness Prevention Plan? Or is it the ICHI Illness Promotion Plan? B. Does everybody agree with B? Yes. All right, so you know why you're here. We've heard the term IIPP, and you won't hear me use Injury and Illness Prevention Plan over and over and over. It is our IIPP. What's the most common occupational injury that occurs in the town of Los Gatos, let's say over the last 5 years? Any guesses? Is it back strains? Headaches? Or falls? Falls. How do you know that? Because rumor travels fast, or because there's some notification that goes out when somebody's injured? How do you know that? Well, the answer that I'm looking for, and that what I hope is going to happen from here on out, because it's defined in the IIPP, is that we're going to share accident information and trends such that we're all aware of where to focus our attention and resources. So yes, indeed, it is falls. How many lost work days did the town have over the last 4 years? Whoops. C? Anybody, any other guesses? Oh, come on. Take a guess. B? A? It's C. Yes, it is C. So, for the last 4 years, and let's see if a worker year is 2,000 hours, we lost half of a worker year over the last 4 years because people were injured and out of work. That's a tough thing for not only the person that's injured, because we identify with our workplace and this is where our support comes from. In some cases, it affects our ability to financially survive. And the people that are left there to cover for that half year, then have to double on their work, causing additional stress and demand. So that's a big deal. Not only do we want to reduce pain and suffering from injuries, but we want to keep everybody actively and busy at work, because if I'm injured and I'm not at work, I'm probably also not out riding my mountain bike or doing the other things I like to do. Who or what group is responsible for your safety? And if this session was going to have a test at the end, this would be on it. Is it the OSHA compliance officers, some of whom I know in the room have had personal experience with that? Is it the safety committee? Your significant other? I know I try to keep my spouse out of trouble. Or is it every individual's responsibility? D. You know, unfortunately, we've had some pretty dramatic events over the course of this country in the last few years, and I think the most memorable being 9/11, which we're getting ready to have an anniversary of. If nothing else proved to us more dramatically that nobody can guarantee our safety and protect us, it was that event and many others like them. We all have a very vested interest in looking out for ourselves, having a plan, knowing what to do to prevent injuries to ourselves and others. Now, at the top of our scheme of responsibilities for safety, you heard a little bit about the safety committee that was formed, and I send out a special thanks to these folks because they have dedicated well over a year of their time and effort in helping to develop this program and help identify specifically for Los Gatos where the risk exposure is and how we can best address it. So I too would like to ask for acknowledgement. If you're on the safety committee, would you please stand? Thank you. Now, as I just said, the safety committee isn't going to physically go out there and do safety for everyone. They are a coordination group. They review the facility inspections to determine what's the best route to take if we find exposures that could cause injury or accidents. They serve a very important role as an advisory group to town management. Town management has very big administrative issues to deal with that reach far beyond even town lines, and so it's important that this group is able to provide feedback from each department. And in my mind, probably their most important role is to be the liaison and provide that communication link between you and management and to the safety committee itself, so that you have every opportunity to convey your safety and health concerns, and hopefully we'll get it all prioritized, and as we slog through the development and implementation of this program, that we'll all be better off there at the end. They are available to you at any time to answer questions about the IIPP. OSHA is very, very clear in their standard that everyone must have direct access to accurate information about injury and illness prevention. So what we have given you, I believe, in your packet, and if not, it is in the on the website, the HR website, is a list and for contact numbers for the safety committee members. These people have graciously volunteered to serve for 2 years on the committee, so we still have another year to get to know them and utilize their knowledge for the program. Yes, ma'am. I beg your pardon. It is not in your packet, and I knew that. It's posted on the HR website, so you can find this information there. We have both the department that's represented, the primary and backup member, their phone numbers, and of course, you know, their emails are probably already programmed in. So I encourage you to contact them if you have any concerns that you would like to have brought before the committee or that needs to be taken to management to address. We are in the process now of identifying appropriate training needs relative to safety, because as you know, there are both regulatory requirements for health and safety training, and there are sometimes other trainings like one that comes to mind is liability regarding employment practices. We have to do sexual harassment training. We have to do, there are all kind of other things that all tie in together that you wouldn't think necessarily is health and safety training, but as a coordinated effort to educate everybody on these issues, it's a much more coordinated plan. I already told you that. Now, let's get into the whole meat of this. This is the actual table of contents from your IIPP, which is now, thanks to Maxine, posted on the HR website in its entirety. So, you know, if you have some burning desire and are having trouble sleeping tonight and want to go onto the website and read it in each word, that's where it is. There is method to the madness. There are these divisions because, for two reasons, Cal OSHA says we have to include all of those things, but two, you know, they were at least wise and smart enough to know that these are really the standard best practice areas in any injury and illness prevention plan. You heard Elena talk about the fact that I spent a lot of time in airline industry and mining. You can well imagine the safety exposures there. Most of those organizations had better injury and illness prevention rates, and I'm talking about lost days, actual accidents, than most cities. You wouldn't think so, but they take this stuff very, very seriously, and they implement it very, very well, and they enforce it. So there's a reason for these things to be involved in the program. Everybody in the room used one of these at one time or another? If you can't see it, this is actually a map of Los Gatos.
That map or
any map? Some of us are better at reading them than others. And GPS is quickly making these go away. But everybody have some experience with what this is for and what's its main purpose? I'm sorry? Sure, you could identify a location. Come on, not a trick question, I promise.
To find your way.
Yeah, very simply. It's a symbolic tool. You know, it doesn't describe in detail. We still have to get in the car and drive it to get there, but this is the tool that we use to find the way. That is simply what the IIPP is. It's just the three-dimensional version. There's a lot more pages, and it's all verbal, but it's still a map. It is the roadmap to the things that we have to do, and theoretically, if we do them correctly, we will significantly reduce the opportunity to have a serious injury or illness. Are we ever going to prevent every accident? What do you think? Probably not. I mean, that's kind of why they call them accidents in a way. But a lot of the things that get passed off as accidents aren't really. Or they could have certainly been mitigated to be less significant or avoided altogether if we had approached it a little differently. So even though we say, and this is right out of your IIPP, that our goal is to prevent, it's anticipate and correct accident-producing behaviors and conditions to prevent 100% of employee injuries. If we didn't set that goal, we would kind of look silly because it would seem like we were saying that some injuries are acceptable. And that's we do not believe that, and we don't want that to happen. We just know that in all probability, the 100% goal is something we're shooting for. We also define very clearly in the IIPP the responsibilities for the program. And this is where it's probably appropriate to say, even we have a health and safety committee, but the town also has a risk management committee that is composed of the executive team. That group oversees what our safety committee is doing and is very active in budgeting and policy change and the things that have to happen at that level for us to make fundamental changes down at the operational level. So that's where our town manager, our HR director, our finance manager, all that group that we don't necessarily see at every health and safety committee are involved in the program at another level. Then certainly we've already beat that horse to death about the fact that each of us are responsible for our own health and safety and that's of others. Our department heads and supervisors are going to be key in making sure this program is implemented, monitoring its effectiveness, making sure that you have the answers that you need to any questions, access to documentation. If you have a health and safety concern, that we make sure that we get an answer and a resolution to you as quickly as we can. Then the committee simply provides the backup for all that. All of the paperwork, all of the inspection reports, the accident investigations, with obviously due attention to privacy considerations, will be reviewed so that we make sure that the quality of those activities actually does identify what the exposures are to not only you, but visitors to the town, to our infrastructure. We're concerned about the preservation of our buildings, of the safety of contractors, all of those things. You know, I like to say, you know, I don't walk around with six buckets and put employee safety in one bucket and contractor safety in another bucket and property protection in another. It's all safety. And in most cases, a very, very good example is that one vehicle accident can actually cause an employee injury, damage to one of our vehicles. If we hit somebody else, it could produce a liability claim against us and an injury to someone else. And in the course of that, if it happened in an intersection and a car runs over the light pole in the course of the accident, then we've got that property damage. So one risk, i.e. vehicle operation, can impact everybody, and that's why we look at it as a whole. Now, OSHA also wants to be sure that, yes, we have this marvelous program in place and it defines all of these great things that we're going to do, but how are we going to assure compliance? And this is where, again, we all are part of the picture. First of all, and the reason that you're here, is that we're going to ensure that everybody knows what's in this document and what's required and what's expected. We're going to provide training, starting with today. We're going to enforce safety policies and procedures. Is everybody aware that the town has a code of safe practices? You do. It's a list of safety rules. And Rumi, is that also on the website yet? It's in some other manuals. Right. Again, we're still building this process, but those are the fundamental safety rules that we all are held to account for, and they are things like not operating equipment you're not trained for, and basically wearing appropriate personal protective equipment if required, those sort of things. It's about a one-page list, and those are our fundamental code of safe practices. We want to enforce them, and we want to evaluate safety performance. The goal is not simply to do your job. We all show up every day and do our job. The goal is to do it right and safely. You've probably all worked with people who were pretty darn sloppy, and not only did they produce more work for you in all probability, but maybe even created an opportunity for an accident to happen for themselves and someone else. So the plan is to build in to our program performance measures actual safety measures. So how well do we adhere to our own safe practices? When there is a deficiency noted and we have an issue where someone just simply for whatever reason, is a new employee, has transferred from another department, we've gotten a new piece of equipment, we need to make sure that all of those people are up to speed and know how to not only operate that equipment or perform that job to do it effectively, but to do it safely as well. So those are the ways that we're going to assure compliance with the program. Communications is key, and we again talked about that. It's interesting in municipalities, and again, looking over my career, I see almost more rigid divisions among public entities in terms of communication among departments. So our goal in our IIPP is to make this a town-wide effort and to piggyback on the things that some departments are doing very well and that some, either because it just hasn't become a problem yet or they're not aware, that we can promote and expand best practices among the departments. And by having this liaison group that we call our safety committee, we have a way to have all of that information come back to a central clearinghouse and get that information back out. So that's important. The biggest change that you may not be aware of is that you currently have a safety hotline in place because OSHA is quite concerned that, you know, you all look terribly browbeaten to me, but apparently there are organizations where there is substantial fear of reporting a safety hazard or concern. So you have in place a hotline that you can call anonymously. It's maintained, over in PPW. The messages are checked every day. They are recorded, and then what will happen is if you want a direct response, then obviously you have to leave your name. If you prefer to stay anonymous, then that information, the response to your concern, will be posted. And I think the plan now is to post on bulletin boards or lunchrooms in the all departments, because in all probability, if you've observed something you're concerned about in terms of unsafe behaviors or an actual physical hazard, then somebody else has seen it too. So we want to share that information among everyone else. Something very, very important, though, you've all probably called your doctor's office for an appointment and gotten the message, if this is an emergency, hang out and dial 911. This is not an emergency line. It's checked once or twice a day. If you see something imminent that is likely to cause a substantial problem for anyone, then you want to immediately get in touch with a manager. If it is a public safety issue, call 911. But this is not an emergency number, important to remember. Other ways that we're going to communicate with you about safety include job orientations. The lovely thing about most public entities is that you are not a continual revolving door of new people coming in, so you don't have to train and retrain an awful lot. But that initial job orientation is important for you supervisors in the group. It's particularly important because it's at that event where you set the tone for how safety is viewed in the town. If the S word never even comes up in that initial conversation, you have immediately conveyed the message that it's not important. So safety orientations included in job orientation is essential. We are clearly communicating what our intent is through our IIPP document. We are doing safety training programs. We do have a calendar set up. The next one will be in January on another topic. And as we go through the development of this plan and identify what those both required and suggested trainings are, we'll be doing those. Police is involved in training all the time because of post requirements. And there are all kind of occupational specific trainings that happen aside from this program. PPW already has a very effective tailgate safety meeting program in place, which is, again, an OSHA requirement, but it's also been proven over time to be very effective. Little bitty short one-topic meetings on a safety issue tend to be much more effective and provide much more information than maybe sitting in a room for an hour and a half and hearing about a lot of different exposures. So we really encourage that use of shorter, smaller, very focused safety meetings. Every year in February, we're required to post the OSHA 300 logs. Anybody know what that is? Has anybody ever seen it? It's simply a log of what are termed recordable injuries. So anytime an employee is injured in the town of Los Gatos, it has to go on this Form 300, and we have to submit it to the state. It sounds like a Big Brother thing, and, you know, in a sense, I suppose it is, but personally, when I go in to evaluate someone's safety and health program, that's the first document I ask for, because the history that's recorded in that tells me an awful lot. If I see trends emerging or lots and lots of serious injuries centered around one particular activity, that's where I'm going to spend my resources, because even though I know that we all have infinite time and money, you know, sometimes we have to prioritize. Well, that's how I prioritize. So that's an important document. And every year, OSHA says that for the month of February, it has to be posted in a place where all of you can see it. So no secrets. You can look at it. If you see something that concerns you, that's a good time to come to your safety department representative and say, I'm seeing a trend emerge here. What's the story, or what was this about? So that's important information. And then, as I said, feedback about safety performance is important. And that is something that over time that your supervisors and managers will be getting more involved in as well. Whoops. I didn't click often enough. That's where I'm trying to go. There we go. This is a goal at this point, but the plan is to also share any lessons that we learn from accident investigations. For instance, I was just dealing with a playground injury not very long ago, so not an employee injury, but a liability injury, and a child was injured on this playground. And it was a case where the entire recreation department needed to know the details of this particular situation, and so we took the lessons learned from that investigation and used it to train other people who are knowledgeable about the particular area, but not necessarily that this piece of equipment could be a hazard. The same thing applies for employee injuries. And then lastly, obviously, we really encourage and solicit your comments, because you're the ones that are out there at every building, on many of the sidewalks and streets of the city every day. We have, how many people are in this room? 70 or 80? So we have 70 or 80 pair of eyes in this room that can be extremely helpful in notifying Public Works or whoever it is that needs to deal with the hazard. There's more information about our safety hotline. The number is 5799. Burn it into your memories. And whenever you see something that concerns you, definitely call it in. The next section, and to me, is the meat of the IIPP, or any safety program of any sort, or risk management program. If you don't recognize the hazard, then it's awfully darn hard to correct it. Now, I'll preface this by the fact, and I suspect most of you already know that. Anybody have any idea what percentage of injuries are caused by a behavior versus a physical hazard? Take a wild guess. No guess? Close. 22%? I heard 80%. I heard 22%. Any other guesses? That's a pretty wide range. It's actually 85% according to the National Safety Council. So we're going to have far more luck and success in preventing injuries if we intervene in behaviors as opposed to walking around looking for hazards. The hazards are kind of the low-hanging fruit. There are lots of code standards. Our handrails have to be a certain height. However, if they're falling off the wall, that's not helpful. If we have tripping hazards and the States and Highway Code says that our sidewalks need to have less than a 3/4 inch offset, if not, it's a tripping hazard. all those things are important to recognize. And in this town and many, many others, that has been the source of accidents. But for the most part, if we go and look at statistically and look at accident investigations for employee injuries, you know, they tend to be behaviors and shortcuts and things that we probably knew better, or maybe not. Maybe we didn't know better. Maybe we had not been appropriately trained, and then an accident resulted. So when you're out there and you're assessing and ranking hazards, look for the behaviors. Watch what people are doing. Captain Forrest mentioned that we're in the process of doing facility inspections, which, again, is a requirement that we do for safety reasons every quarter or every year. But what are the odds that on any one day I'm going to walk through a building and see the hazard that's going to cause the injury? It's pretty slim. You know, unless it's just an ongoing problem that somebody uses something as a doorstop that somebody's going to trip over and I happen to see it that day. One of my favorites I saw just recently was the can of gasoline with the rag stuck in the top sitting beside the hot water heater at the fire station. That's probably my favorite lately. So, but that doesn't happen very often. You know, more often than not, I will get much more mileage out of standing around watching people work, how they lift things, how they use their computer station, because repetitive motion injuries and those sort of things are far more likely. So don't be complacent about the fact that, you know, oh, somebody else is inspecting my building once a year and therefore I'm safe. We did a baseline assessment to get this all started, and that's why a lot of the IIPP content is what it is. We actually had an independent third-party company come out and go through some of the buildings and, you know, kind of tell us what they saw, and that's how we've decided to direct and prioritize our inspections. It's also how, along with our safety data and our trend data, decided how we were going to prioritize the training and organize people's time. Captain Forrest indicated she's been doing a security survey, and that's because in the course of doing this initial assessment, people express concerns about security. Well, workplace violence prevention is an issue that OSHA is very concerned about and interested in, and so we made that a priority in our IIPP. Let's see, anything else I want to tell you about there? Probably, if you look at that list on recognizing, evaluating, and correcting hazards, what's going to make the difference in that list? What's going to actually prevent an accident or an injury? Can everybody see it? What's the most important thing in that list? Take a guess. Item three, prompt reporting. Okay. I can see that one. Any other ideas? Hello?
Four.
Action and follow-up, absolutely. We can walk around all day, and we can assume it's somebody else's problem, maybe even tell them about it, but until some action is taken, nothing changes, right? So it's that actual active intervention that will actually prevent the accident. Whoops, backward. It doesn't want to do it today. It really is true that what you don't know can hurt you. So it's not just the things that you observe in walking around the city or you read in a report. Want to see it again? Everybody wants to see it again. What happens in an assessment is that we actually come out and look at things in depth. We don't just walk around and look for the minor things or the obvious things. It's the stuff under the ice that tend to get in the way. And what we discovered is that for the town of Los Gatos, and again, you'll find you're not terribly different from a lot of other towns, is that the key safety exposures were falls. They were vehicle accidents, ergonomic related, meaning lifting, repetitive motion, equipment related injury. I know this is going to be scary. The infectious and venomous material exposure, a lot of poison ivy, a lot of bee stings, and workplace violent prevention and emergency response. So those were the things that fell out, and it would be interesting to know from this group, who've been here a long time and been out and around, you know, if these match the things that pop into your mind when you think about safety and health exposures. But that's what popped out of our talking to people, out of looking at the statistics, of evaluating the physical hazards. And interestingly enough, the exposures don't really vary a whole bunch among departments. What this little graph shows you, and I don't know that you can see it very well, but this was just for last year. These are the employee injuries that happened last year. And that great big piece of the pie, fall, trip hazard, is falls. And not many, I mean four. I mean, these are not huge numbers. And then we've got a tie over here between strains and sprains and caught in, meaning, you know, somebody got squished in something, either their hand got caught in a door or something like that. But those are the type of statistics that we track from year to year, and we can see how they're going. The good news is that for the town over the last 5 years, you're seeing a steady decline in the number of accidents that are occurring. Now, there have been a couple of severe ones that ended up costing a lot of money and resulting in a lot of time off, but the good news is that we're having fewer. Statistically, the more accidents you have, and this is why people become complacent, the more you have, the more likely you're going to have a very bad one. It's the average, you know, the law of large numbers, that sooner or later, and we tend to disregard those paper cuts and those high frequency things until the finger gets amputated. And sooner or later, that's how it happens. So that's why we look at frequency and try to keep those numbers down. This is the recordable injury rate, and I don't want you to take anything away from this slide other than it's an illustration that accidents just don't happen to people in public works. Most people feel that they are not particularly exposed, except for police, to any really serious injury exposure. But what this data, and this is from our city, from our town, is that this blue line down through the middle is the average of all of Los Gatos. So we can see that accidents do happen in every single department, and the recordable injury rate is just simply the number of injuries per 100 full-time people. So that was the illustration there, is that the IIPP is important for all of us. It's not a police issue. It's not a public works issue. Our facility inspection program has just begun. We just started with our first buildings a couple of weeks ago. Bruce Smith is heading up that program and is a member of our safety committee. He and Anthony, is Anthony in this? There you are. The three of us are starting the initial inspections now because we want to make sure that we include those code issues that may be out there. Bruce is key because he is responsible for facilities, and he knows these buildings very, very well and what's in place and can facilitate the correction of any kind of particular hazard that's identified or problem that needs to be remedied. So he is another of your go-to people if you're already aware of things that may be a problem. We will have most of the major buildings completed by January. So if you're interested, that information will probably be available in facilities. If you just have a burning curiosity to know what was found in the building where you work or ones that you visit often. Again, if you see something obvious, it's not necessary to wait and call Bruce. You know, take charge. If it's a tripping hazard, if there's something lying in the floor, if there is something that just requires a screwdriver to tighten it up, you know, just do it. Another thing that we'll be adding in later as time goes by is called job hazard analysis. And there's a very good reason for doing job hazard analysis as well, in that not only do we need to know what the hazards are associated with our jobs, but Cal OSHA also says we have to train people specifically to address those hazard exposures. So, for instance, in my occupation, trips and falls may be among my biggest exposures. The one I worry most about is the number of miles I put on in a vehicle on a lot of freeways. So associated with my job, vehicle accidents are probably my biggest concern. Over in PPW, they have some pretty scary things. Sometimes they have to go into confined spaces. Confined spaces have a set of very, very rigid safety requirements to assure that people don't die in those places, because they have, and that's why OSHA instituted a lot of these controls. But those of you who sit behind a desk every day, has anybody had carpal tunnel syndrome or repetitive motion problems, tendonitis from playing tennis, bowling, knitting? No? Wow. What a group. Well, it's not unusual for people who do, you know, keyboarding, who knit, who bowl, who put stress on their hands, to have repetitive motion sort of injuries. And that is a very specific injury associated with that occupation. And I know that the town already has a program in place that's being expanded, whereby ergonomic evaluations of workstations are taking place. That's great news. That's very progressive on the part of the town, and it helps identify right on and right up front if the workstation is set up correctly, if it's going to contribute to that sort of injury, whether your screen is set up correctly so that you don't experience eye strain. You know, we tend to discount those if there's not blood involved. We don't tend to think a bit about it being very serious. But and I have had those kind of injuries, and it's quite debilitating when you can't use your hands. So important information to know. So again, not only for very practical reasons do we want to identify what the job exposures are, but we also want to be OSHA compliant. Because there are actually people in this room who have participated in OSHA inspections and had to respond to questions. And it is not unusual for OSHA to go and visit and ask these questions. You know, what kind of training have you received? Where's your IIPP? Who's in charge? You know, those kind of questions come up. We have to document all this. So, therefore, we have our IIPP document, but again, this is just a simple 14-page roadmap. The documentation that also has to go along with that are all those accident investigations, you know, all four or five of them, fortunately, because we're not inundated. We have our inspection reports that have to be documented. We have to record when the injuries occur and post them, as I said, on the OSHA log every February. What do you suppose the point is of all this paper, other than it's what the state does? Yeah, killing trees. Yeah. What happens if it's not written down? It's pretty simple, right? We document simply to record what we've done, to give us a means of follow-up and accountability. Anybody here work in a department where you don't document to protect yourself? I document so I can remember more than 15 minutes, but yeah, I mean, we write those things down, we keep records so that we can go back and make sure that we've responded to the things that have been identified. And where that becomes particularly important is on the liability side, where if we've conducted an inspection and someone is injured in a particular location, but we can't generate a report that says we were there and showed a conscientious effort to correct the situation, then we don't have much to go on. And probably the most common complaint I get from claims adjusters, including those that work on behalf of the town, is that they go to court and they have nothing to defend you. So that documentation becomes very, very important, not just from a practical standpoint in continuing the operation, but for defense purposes. So if you hear a lot of emphasis on writing things down, documenting, keeping records, that's why. There will be unscheduled inspections on occasion, besides those very effective annual inspections of facilities. OSHA says, and good practice dictates, that we will do an inspection if new substances, processes, or procedures, equipment are introduced into the workplace. Makes sense. If somebody in this room calls the hotline tomorrow or goes to their manager and says, you know, this has been out here for a long time and we really need to address it, then an inspection will be done. If there's an injury or illness in a particular location where there needs to be a physical inspection to determine if a physical condition contributed to the injury, if there are complaints or things that concern people and they want an extra look, whoops. And the one that I left off, or if OSHA shows up and does the mother of all inspections, they can come whenever they want. Doesn't happen often, and to be real honest, if it hadn't been shared with me that OSHA had been to our town several years ago, I would have thought that your chances of ever having OSHA show up were slim and none. So shows what I know. The response to those hazards that we discover through all of those different ways will vary. We don't need to call 911 for everything that happens or that we're worried about. Measured response, it's all prioritized. If it's a minor easy fix, like I was saying, just take care of it, fix it, eliminate it. If the issue requires more time, say we need Bruce to get involved and order a new part, a handrail needs to be replaced, there's a loose step, a computer monitor needs to be put up on a stand, something that can't be done in an instant, then we're required to warn the person or people that are exposed and try to at least reduce their exposure till it's corrected. And all of that's documented, all of that happens, that's communicated through the hotline or through just going to your supervisor or safety committee member. And this is to quote OSHA, if there is an imminent threat to someone's safety, or, and it doesn't matter whose, or a building's going to burn down, or you see an accident waiting to happen, you remove everybody from the area and you leave it to the people that are trained and equipped to handle it. And that's why it was mentioned earlier that we're working on an emergency response plan to address those kind of circumstances. We are also required to provide training and instruction. And as we talked about, I don't think we need to beat that one too hard, but we already know that there are mandatory training. In fact, there's a two-page spreadsheet on the OSHA website that defines all of the required training depending on what your occupation is. There are a lot of different sources for this training. As Elena said, ABAG provides a lot of training. Does everybody here know what ABAG is, by the way? We keep using that term. Association of Bay Area Governments. You are part of a pool, and it's called ABAG Plan, and basically you share risk with 31 other cities. So when you have a claim, all of those other cities may have to help pay for it, and vice versa. So you all have a very vested interest in that you've got a very effective risk management program in place. So to support that effort, they provide a lot of great training. There are lots of organizations out there that also provide employee safety trainings. So it'll come from a lot of different sources. And again, your occupation will determine which training you get. It's probably not necessary for a roomie to go sit through 8 hours worth of confined space training, even though her office may feel confining at times. It doesn't meet the OSHA definitions. Okay, so OSHA says that we had to do today. So to reinforce and make you feel better about why we ask you here, that's why we're here. Again, when new hazards or job duties are assigned, new substances, processes, procedures are introduced, that usually specifically refers to the Hazard Communication Program, or in California we know it as Right to Know, because the things that we deal with in terms of materials and supplies change all of the time. So if there is something that comes into our workplace that has a material safety data sheet, then everybody that's exposed gets to sit through training and understand how to read that material safety data sheet and understand how to protect themselves against that material. The supervisors must be trained to familiarize themselves with the exposures to the people that work for them. Just because we become a supervisor or manager, maybe in 1970, you know, we may be dealing with completely new circumstances and new equipment and things, and so it's important for our leaders to also understand what the safety hazards are associated. Again, specific jobs. Most training, because again, based on our initial assessment and just knowing what the city functions are going to be among emergency response and evacuation plans, workplace violence prevention, infectious or hazardous material control, ergonomics, vehicle operations, and then PPW has its own set of requirements that are construction related that are separate from this IIPP. Moving on to the section 1F, we are required to investigate all accidents. I salute the town of Los Gatos in taking a much more progressive approach in that we're not limiting this to just employee injuries. If there is an injury to a visitor to the city, a contractor, a resident, to a contractor, we want to look into that too, because as I often say, if you and I are walking out the door together or up this platform and I trip and fall, I'm a liability, you're a workers' comp claim. So same exposure, same things, same injury, but it's dealt with in different ways. So we will investigate everything that happens, including significant near misses. They do happen, and again, you know, back to the whole argument, you can't really prevent things if you don't see them in advance. That's why the importance of looking at near misses. I mean, we've all been in those situations where dodged the bullet on that one. Those are the ones that really need to be evaluated and investigated so that we know that the next time we're not dodging the bullet, the bullet never left the gun. If I can't convey anything else on accident investigation, it's that the whole intent of the investigations we're talking about are to get to root cause. It's about fact-finding, not fault-finding. We're not really worried about, nobody is going to drag us to court and say, you know, this is all your fault. We're not in the situation that PD's in a lot of time where they have to define responsible party. For our purposes in investigating employee injuries, we just want to know what happened, what the actual root causes were, so that we can convey safety information and also develop preventive measures around that so that we don't see a recurrence. Supervisors are required to investigate, and I want to put everybody's mind at ease. We're not talking about reenacting plane crash investigations here. We're talking about a very simple question and answer process where we're digging down into the actual events to find out what the circumstances were surrounding the injury. If it gets beyond that, if it's much more sophisticated and requires, you know, skid mark analysis or whatever, then no, our supervisors and me are not going to do those kind of investigations. That's when you have external people come in that are much more sophisticated and trained and have special equipment. So don't let that worry you. Then those reports will be reviewed by your health and safety committee. And there's a very good reason for that, in that it's really good to have a lot of people that don't know anything about your accident or your department look at an accident report, because we ask a lot of questions. And in the course of asking those questions, usually things will come up that you haven't necessarily thought about in your department because you see it all the time and to you it may seem insignificant. I would say I have probably evaluated 5,000 accident investigation forms in my life, and more than half, 85-89% say that the root cause was carelessness. That's usually because enough questions weren't asked. So we want to look at that in a lot more detail, because that's how we turn accident investigation into a tool of prevention. You know, at this point, we're in damage control. We failed in our hazard identification and intervention, so now we're in damage control, so we might as well get something good out of the information. The minimum documentation that OSHA requires are that, number one, somebody did an investigation, and by the way, you have a very good form that already exists in the city that we're going to enhance just a little to gather more information in terms of trying to identify safety issues surrounding the accident. We have to identify what the unsafe act or condition was, and we have to document what corrective action was taken. So again, if there's ever, obviously we want the practical information so that we can make the intervention, but if OSHA ever asks and wants to see those forms, those are what they're going to audit us against. Record keeping, we're required to keep those OSHA 300 logs and post them every February for the entire month. And in each department, we have to have job-specific training, general safety training records, and inspections. And with that in mind, everybody here did sign the sign-in sheet when you came in, right? Which is our documentation that we conducted IIPP training. So in review, the takeaways from my perspective, and I hope that these are the ones that stuck with you anyway, is that, again, this document that's posted on the HR website is the same thing as this. It won't get us there, but it tells us how. It lays out the roadmap. That we are all responsible for it, and that the safety committee, Kathy, the town safety officer, the executive team, cannot guarantee anybody's safety because it's all up to us. You probably won't be able to prevent anything if you don't recognize it to start with. So that whole discussion that we had about supervisors and each of us identifying the exposures associated with our job is essential, and then developing the controls around them is really key to achieving that 100% prevention goal. And if we don't document it, we have no way to follow up and hold ourselves accountable for the activity around the safety program. So you will see and maybe even be asked for documentation from time to time relative to safety. Any questions? Yes, sir. Yes, for all those new hires that are going to come in and we have to train them in IIPP, yeah. They get to listen to
them. Well, I understand that this is mandatory and CYA and all that, but I think it'd be more interesting to know exactly what happens when one of these programs is introduced and what happens as far as injuries and illness prevention is. Is it working? I mean, that's all thrown out here, but how's it work?
How does it work?
I mean, what are the results?
Well, since we're just rolling it out, I showed you our baseline data. If it's very effective, we should see those numbers go down. I will tell you, generally, I can tell you personally from the organizations that I've worked with, I will typically see a 53 to 57% decline in accidents and cost. Now, even though it kind of steals some of my thunder and doesn't make me look quite so good, that the research also shows that just due to the Hawthorne effect, you'll see a 25% decrease in the very beginning. And what the Hawthorne effect was a study done years and years ago where just raising awareness and pointing attention at something for a little while and changing something changed the behaviors. Now, it tends to backslide pretty quickly, but you can see that initial drop. Any other questions? Yes, Ruby. Oh, that's right. I forgot the microphone.
Can you give a little substance to that response by maybe talking just briefly about other agencies that you provide, where you have seen this work?
Well, let's see. I can back up and kind of give you a little bit of history from the standpoint. I started working with ABAG Plan back in 2003. And my first contact with the town of Los Gatos was that I went out to all 32 members at the time and did risk management assessments. In other words, talked with the departments, looked at paperwork, determined how risk was managed in each town. Now, the focus at that time was more liability, property protection, vehicle operations, but clearly, there's so much overlap that the employee risk aspect was included in that. Well, what came out of that assessment process, and not just for this town, but for all 31, was that there was a major gap in the formality of safety and risk programs in place, and very, very little documentation and cohesiveness in those programs. At that time, and I wish I had the numbers, but the cost of claims, particularly for you and the rest of your pool sharing members, was huge, in the millions of dollars. What we did was take all of those reports and distill them down into basically a best practice program. So what we're actually using to guide us, and the IIPP is a key part of this best practice program, but it lays out the best practices for an effective risk management program based on these principles of identification, investigation, and all the things we talked about today. And it also addresses infrastructure safety, inspections, maintenance, prevention programs for infrastructure failure and so forth. We had instituted that program in 2005, and we continue to work with the cities to implement these best practices. Since we did that, the number of claims across the pool has dropped, and the cost has dropped 60%. So it is very, very effective when we implement these very well-defined, well-managed programs with accountability in place. Someday, my goal in life is to turn over this risk management assessment function and self-evaluation to you, to each town, so that you know where you are at any one time. Because that's really the ultimate, is when you're so engaged in the risk management process that you're looking at your own accountability issues. Did that answer your question? Any other questions? Well, before we leave, I would like to give a special thanks to Karen and Maxine. You can just imagine how difficult it was to coordinate getting all of you here in the same place at the same time. And Maxine has put in innumerable hours getting all this posted on the website so that it's accessible to you now. It's there for your reference, all of the go-tos. Jenny, I'm so sorry. Needless to say, this was a joint effort among a lot of people who did an awful lot of hard work. So thank you to all of you.
Okay, any last questions? Just remember the safety hotline number, and please feel free to use it. That's what this is all about. So,
what's the hotline number? 5799. Good.
Okay, great. Thank you, Kathy. Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.